right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin, here once again with Dom. Dom, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I spent some time off last week when I was wrongfully convicted of my alleged role in Lawyergate. Despite being paroled early, thanks to my impeccable behavior, it still took a lot of begging and groveling for you to allow me back onto my own show. But luckily, we seem to have patched things up, and we're on a trial period for now. So we'll see how things go. But
it's a trial period? Time being. Yeah. I was going to say, to stick with the legal theme, you are not the Stephen Avery of this situation. You are very much the Ken Kratz of this situation. So
Colin, I am the Kathleen Zellner of the situation, okay? it turns out, actually, I was just away last week, and Jordan Paha very kindly filled in. And I will say, I will step away any time, gladly, if it means getting into JP back behind the microphone again, even if it's only, sadly, for 1 week.
Yeah, I would be down to just kind of alternate which one of us is not on the podcast on a weekly basis and just make Jordan the new regular host of this thing.
I'm pretty sure you would be even more down to just have Jordan replace me every week, which I couldn't complain about, honestly. That might actually be an upgrade for the listeners. But regardless, that was a special treat for last week. We don't want to overdo it.
Yeah, all right. Well, it was a great time with Jordan, indeed, as it always is. But excited, Dom, to have you back in. And in particular, because, first of all, I think despite this being probably not the most exciting episode of the season, I do still think this was another fun week, and it continues to be, I think, for pretty much everyone that I've seen, a really entertaining season. And I'm especially optimistic because, while as much Twitter love as may exist and, as may permeate my conscious and subconscious brain over the course of the time that I'm online, I always know that when we step into the podcast, I could show up here and Dom could tell me that he ends up hating this thing, that everybody else in the universe there's just nothing but critical and peer and all other types of acclaim. But Dom, in just talking to you a little bit off air, I was very excited that it sounds like you are also on board with that and loving this cast and loving this season so far.
Of course, and it's only
crude, give me a break.
It's only crude stereotypes that would lead you to think any differently.
Okay.
I've been really high on this season, and typically right now, just around the merge, as we're leading up to that, is you get these holding episodes where nothing much is really happening. You roughly know where the votes are going to go, and it's just a question of which tribe ends up losing the challenge and going to tribal. And it's a testament to how the season has gone so far that this holding episode, which I think this was the weakest episode, but still a perfectly fine one, was still up there along with the average episode on many other just regular seasons.
Right. I think what they have essentially learned, as far as I would be concerned, is in these kind of, I like that term, that holding episode, where it is a bit more predictable. We have seen the early kind of playings out of the post-swap situation, and it really is time to start building up to the merge. They are, instead of trying to sell us on some kind of like legitimate toss-up between Lyrsa and Angelina, or Nick potentially being in the mix there as well, or potentially, Mike quitting was something that crossed my mind at a certain point. It seems like they're putting less of a focus on the actual Tribal Council voting result, which I think is generally something that they build the entire episode around, and instead using these kind of holding episodes to really develop the cast in a much more deep way than they tend to. And I think that's been a really beneficial decision for every single person on the show.
Yeah, and sometimes when we get into the edit zone eventually, it's hard to tell with the content in these episodes, because normally if there's so much going on, you can read into the fact that something is there, that it is going to matter somehow, that when they have so many tough choices to make in the editing room, that something that is going to be crucial to the episode won't end up on the cutting room floor in favor of some red herring or some diversion that they're putting in there just to trick the viewers. Whereas for this, all bets are off, basically. So you have the main plot of the episode, which doesn't take too long and isn't especially interesting, and they have free reign to choose what else they're going to put in there. So it's hard to say whether Allison and Gabby, let's say, is actually going to amount to anything, or is that just trying to set up a little bit of suspense going into the merge? And there are lots of scenes like that this week where we can analyze them, but reading too much into them might be dangerous just because of that fact.
Right, totally. And I think we are at the point with so much character development for so many different people, as far as I would be concerned, compared to the balance that they tended to go with as far as kind of like distribution between main character and background character for so many seasons, that there are at least like 8 or 9 people that are about to make this merge that were this a couple of years ago, I would be very confident that all 8 or 9 of those people would be in there on finale night. And obviously they can't all be in there on finale night here.
Well, even as of the most recent season, I saw somebody tweeting the stats, but at this point in Ghost Island, our eventual winner, Wendell, had, I think, 5 confessionals or something, and there's an entire swathe of that cast that basically had 0 screen time whatsoever, whereas on this cast, I think basically everyone has had a decent treatment so far. Obviously, I'm likely to forget the people that haven't had that because they just don't stick in my memory, but I am pretty sure, with maybe 1 or 2 exceptions, like Allison, unfortunately, that almost everybody else has, we at least get to know them as people, even if they don't have a big role as players just yet.
Right. I would say Allison would probably, unfortunately, be the big exception to this point. I know Alec got off to quite a quiet start, but has certainly been making a name for himself lately. And we did get, as you mentioned, that scene between Allison and Gabby in this newest episode. But I do think, other than Allison, pretty much everyone has at least 3 or 4 scenes of them not necessarily just talking about themselves and their personal life, but at least being involved in the game and letting the audience get familiar with who they are.
Why do you think it is Allison who has been singled out, or maybe it's more passive than that? Maybe it's just being lost in the shuffle somewhere, because she is one of 3 people, I believe, along with Dan and John, who have only had to cast 1 vote so far. They've only been to 1 tribal, and in that case, it felt like that was Jeremy digging his own grave and Natalie trying to dig her own grave and digging his at the same time. And there was a lot of drama going on. And someone as mild-mannered and drama-free as Allison seems to be was probably not going to get any word in edgeways over there. But Dan and John, like, they've gone out of their way to ham up this Brochatos thing, and they're finding reasons to put them in there. Maybe Allison just is, you know, we've been saying a lot about Candace in our Heroes versus Villains patron series, that she seems to attract drama to her, even when she herself isn't doing anything at the time to really deserve that. And maybe Allison's the opposite, where she has like this calming bedside manner almost. And it's like, unless Allison is playing a direct role here and there, she's not going to be stirring up drama or causing trouble. So in a season where there's been a lot of that so far, maybe it's just hard to find time to put her in there.
Yeah, I thought you were about to say that you thought maybe she had that kind of Candace or like Andrea Belkey effect on people, but then I was going to be very surprised and taken aback and berate you for that take. But you are right that it is, I think, like the total opposite. But I also do think it is probably a function of not having been to more than 1 vote at this point. Plus, I would imagine not being the eventual winner of the season. Sad as it is to say, I think she is, of the people who made the merge, one of very few that I would be willing to say I'm conclusively ruling out at this point, just because it has been enough episodes where, were she the eventual winner, they would have for sure found ways to force her into these episodes. And I think having as many people as we do still absolutely drawing live for me to be the eventual winner is one of my favorite things that I could possibly ask for entering any merge of any season. But it's pretty close to impossible to have literally everyone drawing live. And unfortunately, I think it looks like Allison to me is the person who's going to be missing the cut.
Though in Allison's case, it feels like it wouldn't take too much more work to have her there in the mix as well. Even if she's not involved in whatever drama is going down on that given day, there are just these generic confessionals about how you feel about winning or losing the challenge or some development at camp. You can have her give one of those establishing confessionals, especially as she seems like a very just grounded, articulate person. And having that expressed via her would maybe be a benefit to the audience, if anything.
If this were Australian Survivor, I might be in here saying Allison is the favorite based on how little we've seen of her and how much time there is left to develop her as a character. But there's just not that much time, and they just would not. I don't give them that kind of credit just yet to bury the eventual winner to that extent through 6 episodes.
Yeah, if it was Australian or New Zealand Survivor, she would have had 10 confessionals by now, and all of them would be exactly the same. It would just be the same thing on loop over and over again. But I'm hoping with the merge, maybe this hit on Dan will come to fruition, or maybe her storyline is she tries to put the hit on Dan, and that's what gets her cast out of this Goliath majority somehow.
Yeah, I certainly am not counting out the possibility that Allison could play a big role going forward. I just am at this point willing to be on the record saying I would be very surprised if it were exactly first place, but I would probably be open to pretty much any other outcome other than finalist, you know, compelling losing finalist who comes up just short and gets some jury votes.
Right. I imagine that's the last time we're going to be talking about Alice in this episode, so we may as well get that out of the way. Although I guess actually she did have that scene with Gabby, which if we want to clear her off the docket now, I guess we could get to her.
Okay. What did you make of that scene? Because it did stand out to me just on the sheer level of, oh, wow, Allison's finally getting some content. It seems like this Allison-Gabby discussion must lead to something, but I'm not sure, you know, not knowing what else is going to be going on at the merge, how that's going to be coming into play. Do you have any kind of theories?
So I find myself in two minds about this again with Gabby and how she approaches this, because I don't doubt that she sincerely felt left out still, and watching Christian and this whole protracted thing, which some of the audience is already getting sick of, so it wouldn't surprise me if Gabby was getting sick of it too. But she has a front row seat to witness all of that, and she knows that she is not included in it. She's in the audience rather than the cast for that. So she needs to find something to get herself out of that situation, especially as if the Goliath majority holds strong and the other Goliath men want to keep Christian in, then there's only one person left, and it's Gabby. So bonding with Allison, I think, is the smart thing to do. But it also felt like that she was the one person, not just because she's the other woman on the tribe or because she's a doctor, but just the way she carries herself and Gabby needing someone else to confide in. Like, that was always going to happen, I think. But at the same time, maybe it was an element of manipulation on Gabby's part, knowing that she is a very empathetic person and this is the way to connect with her, and trying to make some just entirely dispassionate, rational argument about why you should turn on the Goliath actually isn't the best way to go about this, even if that's what, in your head, you're working towards.
Right. I think this is definitely something, like, it's not a surprise to me to see these two hitting it off and getting along well, and this would be a pairing that I would have expected to come together if they'd been on the same kind of starting tribe. But it seems to me like it also can't hurt for either of them in a five-person tribe to recognize, all right, it would be great for me, you know, as many people as I can who are unwilling to write my name down. That seems like it can only really help. And for Gabby, I would guess she feels really good about Christian at this point and probably thinks, if push comes to shove, I don't know if Christian would be willing to write my name down. So if I can lock down Allison too, it's going to actually be very difficult for me to get voted out here.
Yeah, Gabby, depending on how things go, could either be the most vulnerable player in the game or one of the safest, and it's unclear exactly what that is. She's like Schrodinger's Gabby. We're only going to see that when they actually have to go to tribal and lose a challenge. But this tribe, as we've seen, is in no real danger of losing a challenge at any point, even if this has gone for a few more votes. And we're getting to a merge now where it's an entirely new game, and maybe Gabby is going to be left on the outside again. But I think this is going to go beyond just Davids and Goliaths, and we're going to see some new majority form, and Gabby might be a part of that, even if it's just as like a hangers on via Christian, via like John and Dan somehow.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, quick correction to something you just said, and it's this came up in one of our Heroes versus Villains podcasts recently too. We should just start every episode with corrections of things that we got wrong in the previous week, and I guess with that in mind, it turns out it was actually fake news that Davey was ever wearing a cowboy hat. As far as I know, I did indeed Mandela effect that, so that was a good 5 minutes that we wasted talking about how what a wild coincidence it was that all the people with cowboy hats on the David tribe drew onto the same swap team. But also dumb.
So, hold on. Would you say you Mandela-fested that?
All right, I'll allow it. I'll let that gets the thumbs up. But I also wanted to, last week when you were not here, take you to task for some fake news that you had been putting out. When we initially saw these swap tribes, I felt like you were really laying it on about how automatic the green tribe was going to be in every single challenge, and then we get to the first challenge and they lose it.
Okay, every challenge that matters, all right? I don't especially care if they don't get some chickens or some crockery.
So they weren't trying. They threw the reward challenge is what you're alleging?
That is canon now. You put that out there into the universe.
Okay, got it. Continue.
I think the major thing is they're not guaranteed to win every single challenge, but it felt like this Purple Tribe, Jabeni Tribe, whatever we're calling them nowadays, they seem to be having a really rough go of things. And I don't think they knew for sure that a merge was around the corner, but if you're on either of those other tribes looking at that performance and that immunity this week, you've got to be pretty optimistic about the future, even if you yourself think you're on the outs on your group.
I agree with that. Oh, and using their tribe name reminds me it is time to play another flash round of casual Dom thinks. Dom, what is the name of the orange tribe?
Pass. Can I phone a friend? Is there an audience I can ask even?
Do you know, I gave you enough credit to know purple for sure, and I think you know the green tribe name, but I thought the orange one might stump you.
As the green tribe is Tiva, and not Sativa, as Jordan wonderfully suggested last week. Orange remains an enigma. I'm not sure even the orange tribe themselves know what their tribe is called.
For the historical record, it is the Vuku tribe, but of course on this podcast they will forever just be known as the Orange Tribe.
Yes, not to be confused with the Nuku tribe from a few seasons ago, or possibly any other tribe that starts with the letter V from whatever season before or after that.
Right. So what else, if anything, on that scene between Gabby and Allison?
Well, you asked me for my take on it. What was yours? Do you think anything's really going to come from that? Or is this just them using the screen time they have to maybe shoehorn Allison in there for the first time?
I thought this was definitely going to be something that we will return to at some point in a future episode, most likely this upcoming merge episode, because I don't think, frankly, that these are two characters they would feel the need to shoehorn a scene of them together into this episode if it were not going to amount to something down the line. And honestly, because of how generally good I feel about Gabby, I feel like by extension, just kind of the good feeling is thus rubbing off on Allison's chances at the merge as well. If we're showing Gabby potentially trying to develop this bond for future use, I feel like that could easily be what we're being set up for, is come merge time, the Davids are trying to string together some numbers. Allison's never really been shown fitting in too great with any of the Goliaths, and she is one of the people who potentially hops on board with that.
Could you see Allison getting like our seed almost? Well, she seems popular enough that that's not going to be her fate, but the person in the majority who the majority feels comfortable cutting loose because she has no close ties to anyone still.
I do not see that being the situation for Allison. If she were the merge boot, I don't think it would be for necessarily that kind of reason. I think it would probably be more along the lines of being viewed as kind of a threat. And yeah, I guess the factor of not having any explicitly tight bonds that we've seen to this point would probably be the way that was sold. But I'm not buying necessarily that Allison's going to be kind of just a fish out of water come merge time. I think if she were the merge boot, it would be more essentially a compliment from the other players.
Yeah, so we have taken a brisk jog into the edit zone already here. So apologies for anyone who typically tunes out for that. But now that we're here, we may as well stay here and enjoy our surroundings. So what do you think her fate will be then? Is there a chance that we know that Dan has not one, but two idols, and typically idol victims get a more low-key edit, and Allison certainly has got that so far. So could that be her fate? Will she get hoisted by her own, or maybe Dan's petard instead?
It's possible. It's certainly possible for me, but as I said earlier about Allison, I am totally open to pretty much any outcome. I would be surprised if we show up next week and she's the merge boot, and pretty much anything going forward between final 12 through final 5, I would believe you 100% if you told me that's where roll a however many sided die, and any random guess is as good as mine between those and kind of checkpoints. But I would be very surprised if she was the merge boot, and very surprised if she was in the final 4 or beyond.
Could she be a follow-up to fan favorite and podcast favorite Kelly Remington, who just never gets an edit in the first place, and then when she gets idled out, no one really knows who she is, and it's unclear why she was chosen to begin with?
I suppose so, but it sounds to me like you're really into this idea that she might get idled out.
Well, it just explains her surprising lack of presence so far. Like she was one of the people being hyped up the most preseason, and maybe it's just the difference between that is kind of jarring for me. But I would expect to see more from her, even if she was playing no immediate role. And so the fact that she isn't, it just feels like the game is not going to go well for her. This isn't the start of some blossoming into the power player of the season. It's going to be a fairly disappointing stay, I imagine.
I agree, and I'm proud of us for somehow spending the first 15 minutes of a podcast about this episode on Allison, who's gotten like the least amount of content the entire way leading up to this point. But yeah, I'm totally on board with that. And I just I don't know how it's gonna, after this many episodes have passed. Like we've been through the entire pre-merge, and I feel like Allison would be pretty resoundingly the person that the fewest casuals would be able to identify by name. Maybe there would be some other people competing for that title as well, but that just to me is virtually never going to be a good sign of any kind.
I would bet my life savings against casual Anna knowing who Allison is at this point in the season.
I think she does know the name Allison is someone who's on the cast, but it definitely wouldn't surprise me if we put five just kind of generic white ladies in a police lineup and had casual Anna try to pick out which one was Allison. I don't know if I should be able to do it.
Yeah, if that happens,
I'd be able to do it, by the way.
If that happens, we're getting a wrongful conviction, and I, as Dom Zellner, will have to swoop in and save the day.
I don't know. I really think you're mislabeling yourself here as things pertain to this making a murderer parallel. But I guess we can let the audience be the jury, as apparently is the new trend in the U.S. legal system.
I hope so. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. So I think I'm good on Allison. I'm sure we can spend another 20 minutes on her later on in the podcast if you want, Dom. But let's get into this new episode and kind of wrap up today on all of the pre-merge goings on. And we begin after the fallout from the Natalie vote, where Angelina wants to clarify to Lyrsa the only reason she wrote her name down was as part of that kind of elaborate ruse to make Natalie feel like she didn't betray her and make Natalie feel okay about leaving her jacket behind so Angelina could be warm. Lyrsa, I thought it was interesting. Like I think I would... I was surprised, I guess, to the extent to which Lyrsa was not okay with Angelina, wanting to kind of take that line. And Lyrsa interpreted it as, okay, so this jacket is essentially more important to you than kind of my trust and loyalty. Like, you're willing to put my name down at a tribal council just to get this jacket? What kind of ally is that? What did you think of this reaction from Lyrsa here, Dom?
I think it's a case where, like, the incident itself doesn't mean too much. It's not about the jacket necessarily. It's about the attitude that Angelina needs to have in order to consider doing this in the first place. And if it wasn't this, it was going to be something else that sparked that backlash from Lyrsa. So it's fun to try and tie it to the jacket, but I think that it's just indicative of a larger story here.
Okay. I suppose I was kind of doing the math that if I were Lyrsa, I would feel like I had very much been spared the previous night, and I wouldn't really care how many votes came at me as long as it was not the majority. And I would understand that it's freezing and pouring rain all the time out there, and Angelina, of course, wants the jacket. But at the same time, you are right. It is totally an understandable reaction here from Lyrsa in terms of not feeling great about Angelina just on the surface based on the action she took at that vote. And you are right that it probably should have been more of a consideration ahead of time for me that these two, frankly, might not get along the best, Angelina and Lyrsa.
And we see Angelina make a point of trying to reach out to Lyrsa this week and just instantly getting the door slammed in her face, which I thought was interesting, because Angelina framed it as, you know, we're the two Latinas on the tribe, and I have a kind of level of sympathy for Lyrsa, and typically that's something which would lead to them having a harder time fitting in, but I'm going to turn that around and reach out to her and try and make that a point in our favor. Lyrsa wasn't having any of it, and I think she was already a little skeptical of Angelina before, much more so now after the whole jacket incident. And I do wonder if she had just played along with it, if she could, then maybe we're seeing a whole different outcome here, or maybe this was just like, we need to explain how Lyrsa goes home. This is a way to do it. It's the cleanest and most convenient answer, even if it has no basis in reality.
I think it is the latter. I think it is an easy and succinct way of explaining why tension might be high with Lyrsa. But one thing I definitely wanted to flag up that I really liked was Nick, when he got word that Lyrsa wasn't thrilled about Angelina and how she went about trying to get this jacket. Nick says to Lyrsa, in one of, like, frank, truly, like, one of the best spin zones I've seen in a while on Survivor. He says, if she'll do that for a jacket, imagine what she'll do for $1 million, which I thought was really strong stuff from Nick there, and leaves me very optimistic for him going forward as a salesman.
I like that too. And Nick is proving the point that if you just show up and you don't make obvious mistakes and you validate whatever other people are saying and take that to its logical conclusion, then you're going to do pretty well for yourself, even regardless of what like macro level things are going on in the game. It seemed like everyone that Nick has come into contact with so far seems to like him perfectly well, wants to work with him and go with him. And he's in this swing vote position where he's going to alienate whoever he doesn't choose to go with. And yet they don't seem to come away hating him. I guess Lisa does now that she's out of the game, but she can't do anything about it anymore. Nick seems to have set himself up in a pretty nice spot. Down the line, he's going to have to choose between all of his 10 different named alliances that he set up. So that's going to be difficult to navigate for him and fun to watch for us. But for now, he's sitting pretty, I think.
Right. It seems like he's doing a good job of people feeling comfortable just coming to him, telling them about their drama. He makes them feel all right, makes them feel comfortable, like he's got their best interest at heart, slap a name on this partnership, and we're good to go. And it seems like he's going to be now, with this merge rolling around, potentially deciding between a lot of options here, and maybe down the line that will come back to bite him, like the idea of people feeling like they had such a tight bond with him and he betrayed their trust. But I will certainly take being the person choosing between all of the options versus the person hoping to be chosen pretty much every single time.
I hope down the line we get the equivalent of Nick like misremembering his girlfriend's name or something and just like calling Christian the rock star instead, or some kind of mix up there, because it's hard to keep track of at this stage for us as viewers, and maybe for him as well.
I think he's smart to do these kind of non-handshake gestures for the like the alliance kind of lockdown move, where if you start off on doing a bunch of different secret handshakes with people, you'll catch yourself doing the wrong one. You're doing your Christian handshake with Elizabeth instead of doing your Thoroughbreds handshake with her, and it gets very confusing. I think that's a minor technical point that he's getting very right, is the hands-free, or not hands-free, but hands-independent kind of alliance gestures.
Yeah, I remember Stephen saying that he tried to give that kind of handshake to Jeremy in Cambodia, and Jeremy just slapped it away. But in that case, I think it was, we're standing on a beach in full view of the entire tribe. Maybe this isn't the way to seal the deal and consummate our alliance.
I think Stephen was just happy to finally have a secret handshake with someone.
That might be it too. But it's fun to think about the wider implications of what that gesture represents, I suppose.
Nothing against Stephen. It just, JT doesn't strike me as a secret handshake kind of guy.
Well, not with guys like Steven, typically.
Yeah. So that was, I thought, a really interesting scene. We got Nick and Mike, I suppose, to give full credit where it's due to Mike as well. Also, both doing, I thought, a pretty good job consoling Lyrsa and kind of talking her through this situation, even if it may have been the case that this could have been a more straightforward boot than necessarily the episode let on, potentially. Like, when they went and voted out Natalie, I would be surprised if they hadn't anticipated this situation potentially arising and knowing almost that Lyrsa would be gone if they ended up losing this next challenge.
Yeah, that all sounds right to me.
Yeah. All right, so moving over to the green, the sativa tribe, fittingly the green tribe, we have some this week's, I guess, obligatory Christian content, which, by the way, I am not complaining about. It just seems like that's one of the only recurring themes in all of these episodes, is we're going to hear from Christian. But that is just fine with me, as this time he is laying out for us the fundamentals of spearfishing. And frankly, I thought this was the exact kind of scene that to me demonstrates like exactly why Christian was cast and exactly what I really like about him, because I thought just having him talk about what is something we see so often on Survivor, like this staple of Survivor seasons, is people out there spearfishing, and to have this total I guess for, pardon the pun, this complete fish out of water when it comes to spearfishing, walking us through the process and showing us, conveniently, him becoming more of a Goliath from his David beginnings in such a compelling way. I love this, and I think this is exactly why you put Christian on the show, and this, to me, I thought was a really good illustration of just how good Christian is at delivering on what I'm going to, I guess, call the prophecy of John Cochran, that it seems like they've spent a lot of time trying to repeat with varying degrees of success. But I think Christian is absolutely knocking that out of that kind of role out of the park this season.
Do you see that getting old for you at some point? Or I guess we're halfway through the season now, and it sounds like you're still fully on board. So maybe there's no danger of that.
At this point, I don't see myself getting tired of it, at least on the season itself. Like maybe, if Christian just won't, I don't see this being the case, but Christian wearing out his welcome post-season in kind of like the greater Survivor online universe, as some former castaways have done, I guess that timeline would be in play. But even then, I think Christian, like Cochran himself, just strikes me, at least for me personally, he strikes me as the type of guy that I would almost always be interested in hearing what he has to say about pretty much any kind of topic. I think he's just an interesting kind of compelling speaker, no matter what he's on about.
Yeah, and unlike some of those people who maybe outstay their welcome, like Christian is just seems to be a functional, busy adult, right? Like he's a working professional in a full-time job with a long-term relationship. Like he's got other things going on. He doesn't need to make this his entire life. And I'm sure he'll bask in the glow postseason, assuming things continue going well for him. But and maybe he'll be back out there again, and that glow will reemerge at some point. But I don't see him. I don't see this reaching like an oversaturation point with Christian. For the people who haven't got that already, I know there are some who hate the Christian archetype and the Cochran archetype, and anyone who's in that general space, and others who just hate the people like that in real life too. The people who think, oh, these guys are losers, I hate them. Survivor is meant to be all about challenges and physical survival, and you do get some of those people cropping up from time to time. But the others seem to be fully on board with Christian so far, so he'll definitely have a lot of fans out there if he chooses to engage with them.
You know what I just realized? He is a literal Christian Scientist.
Is he, though? Like, does he have a cross? Or like?
No, his name is Christian, and he is a scientist of some variety, right?
Yeah, but I see, that's just low-hanging fruit, right? That's such
no one
easy
else is
pickup.
Grabbing it. I don't hear anyone else coming up with Christian Scientist when we're talking about a scientist named Christian.
Well, no, you can... you can lay your claim for that. You have reserved that Twitter handle. It's formally yours.
That is highbrow stuff, Dom. That's a strong pull, Christian Science. All right. So definitely.
This is like, I would say the tier below your Branch Davidians gag from the premiere, which was elite. I will grant you that. But this seems like this is an attempt to recapture your former glory and outstaying your welcome in the process. Exactly what Christian is in danger of doing, depending on how things go.
Okay. This green team is going to end up winning this reward challenge, and we're going to see the brochachos once again broing down as they're enjoying their kebab reward here. And we get some more narration from Christian, and this one is where he's talking about just kind of this transformation. It seems like he has been very subtly undergoing here for us so far, Dom, from a David into a Goliath. And I'm guessing that is going to be something that we will hear more about in future episodes. But Gabby, as we've talked about, is not feeling quite as good, and we talked about that scene with Allison. So I guess let's stay. I was going to try to mix it up from Christian for a little bit. Let's talk about the brochachos, I guess, in general, and how you think that's going to play out, because we've seen quite a bit about those three coming together, and now that we didn't see them end up having to go to a vote or anything, but now with this merge rolling around, is that a bond you think is going to end up lasting?
It's going to be tested, I'll say that much. And we saw in the next time on Survivor segment that who was it? Was it Angelina who was trying to target Christian? And I don't know how John, who seems to be very close to Angelina, but also to Christian, is going to feel about that. So that might be a tough choice that he has to make. And then, like, if Kara and Dan are in some Goliath group, they're reunited, or Dan is reunited with Kara. I don't know if we're going the other way there. Then that's a choice that, as a pair, they might have to make. But it seems like either that's going to be a thing that lasts and ends up being this dominant alliance in the game, or that's going to be, or that being severed is going to be the heartbreaking moment or the big moment of the early post-merge.
Yeah, I'm essentially looking at this merge in terms of which of these characters I feel like their stories kind of make sense for them coming together. And the vibe that I've been getting about these brochachos is I'm very much buying the Christian and John sticking together portion of this equation. I'm not so sure about Dan necessarily getting the memo on how this merge vote is ultimately going to go. And I think you are right that whether or not they stay together is definitely up in the air. But we will almost certainly, I would imagine, see this tested. And it may be in the form of everyone else wants Dan to be out at the merge for, numerous reasons, not the least of which are his physical strength and the idol that they know about, not setting aside the idol they don't know about. And it may be kind of a dilemma for Christian with the side of John, potentially, about how to end up playing that when they have this brochacho thing going with Dan.
Nothing to add to that, really.
Okay, perfect. Just say you agree with me and we can move on without any kind of conflict ever again, Dom. So really, I thought my big takeaway was just nerves about Dan's situation here, where in the dark, were I not getting just kind of weird vibes, just kind of by default about just him looking not as actively good as a lot of the people around him and specifically the other people in his alliance. I don't know how to feel too optimistic about Dan, not even just long term, but short term. I feel like Dan would be the person for me that I would be most confident is not going to be around in 3 episodes or so.
I'm certain that Dan is going to meet some tragic end at some point. It's just a question of how soon rather than if.
Okay, and I'm sure we will talk more once we hit the formal edit zone about all of these people, but anything else from
So quickly then, they wheeled out James Clement, who they dusted off and, managed to restore to his to working condition, and they got a brief comment from him. Was that a sign of anything? I don't know how the timing works out, so maybe this is just an absolute unfounded conspiracy theory, but given that Dan now has 2 idols, and seems like he's not going to be aware that he might have to play one of them in the near future, could we be seeing Dan take over that mantle from James? Is Dan going to be wheeled out at some reunion in 10 years' time?
It's certainly in play for me. If anyone is going to be going out with 2 idols, I think Dan is a compelling candidate here. But where did they wheel out James?
It was on an episode of a recent Survivor season, which I know is not helpful.
I'm sorry. You mean they literally CBS wheeled out James?
Yes.
That was after, was that at Ghost Island? Was it that recent or was it the one before that?
I want to say Ghost Island, but I want to think if it was that recent, I would remember it. So for my own sake, I'm choosing to believe it was earlier, which wouldn't line up with the filming schedule here. So that would defeat my point as well. So there's really no good outcome for me here. So please put me out of my misery and move on to something else.
Yeah, I'm going to choose to say that James and Eric got brought out for the Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers finale, which apparently would not line up with that being like a nod to what could potentially be in play. I think that theory is more in line with the Jeff explains the tiebreaker rules and, oh, that must mean 35 ends in a tie, when in fact 36 ended in a tie, but it hadn't even been filmed at the time that Jeff was making that announcement.
Yeah.
And by the way, the reason Jeff made that announcement, just to clarify for people, this always sits so weirdly with me, but I always feel the need to clarify, is because had Brad Culpepper taken Ty, it would have been a tie. And that's why they clarified what would have happened. It had nothing to do with the future seasons, although I certainly was not someone who was entirely ruling out that theory that season 35 could end in a tie by any stretch, as I'm sure our Endgame podcast probably would back up there. But Dom, anything else on these Green Tribe people or any other scenes that I have forgotten to flag up at this point that you wanted to get to?
Do you like the Pochachos as a unit? Because I like all of them individually, and I'm excited to see what each of them has in store for later episodes, but it feels like less than the sum of its parts to me for now.
I do not like the Brochachos as a unit. I think that's a perfect way of putting it. It feels like less than the sum of its parts to me. It feels forced. And I also just, the name, the Brochachos, just feels so lazy to me.
Or really any name after Nick has ruined that for the entire fandom. You know, we could just do without that for the time being.
As we as we went through in our, I think it must have been BB7 podcast, there are so few good alliance names in the history of reality TV, like alliance names that actually work and are cool.
Yeah, I would hear an argument for the Santa Monica Van Boys, and that's about it, really.
That was my number one. I said the only two good alliance names are Chilltown and the Santa Monica Van Boys. Those are the only good alliance names in the history of reality television.
And that's a high bar to clear, which Nick, despite many, many tries at it so far, has failed to me, at least in my view. Mm-hmm. But with the Pachachos, this idea of this unlikely friendship, which is meant to be very heartwarming and inclusive, I like seeing it, and I'm sure it's largely sincere on the parts of all of them. But when you get the same, or roughly the same storyline almost every other season, it seems like, where you have these two people who in real life would never even encounter each other, and they form the unlikeliest of friendships, and that goes on to mean great things for them in the game, and they're the best friends afterwards. At some point, when you've seen that over and over again, do you have to start questioning how unlikely it really is, or is that just what the format of Survivor encourages? And if so, that's great, but it means the framing is still a little bit dishonest then.
I would never put it past the framing to be a little bit dishonest.
Sure, I wouldn't either, but I thought I'd just get your take on that.
Yeah, I don't have a very strong take on that, frankly.
Well, come up with one, Colin. That's the whole point of this. You can't just agree with me.
What's
and move
your take on,
that's
it?
Not how
it works. I mean, it seems like you're just waiting to jump in and disagree with me with your well actually take.
I feel like my take is implicit in the question if you bother to read between the lines at all. But look, it's fine. We can move on. You have successfully conjured up a controversy around this, so that's you've done your job.
Okay, I'm glad. I don't know what just happened. I feel very blindsided by whatever's going on right now, but I'm sorry that I ruined that topic of discussion.
Well, it's either we have to look, either we get meaningful and sincere disagreement, or we have to come up with something to disagree about, and you get to choose which of those routes we go down.
I don't think there's ever any lack of meaningful and sincere disagreement on these podcasts.
Well, good, fine. That settles it then.
So give me something to disagree with.
Well, can we agree on moving on from this and not wasting more? Okay, good.
Apparently, fine. All right, done deal. Let's, I guess, get to Elizabeth over on. I guess she is on the Orange Tribe now, and this week I thought she had a really interesting scene where she was talking about her back being in really bad shape after these first 16 days sleeping on the rounded bamboo, and she wants to take it upon herself and I guess enlist some help from, I think it was Kara helping her, splitting the bamboo and making that somehow flatter and easier to sleep on. What did you make of this scene and the way Elizabeth came across? Because I really didn't know how to piece together the disparity between, it seems like Elizabeth is without question the one who's coming across as like working hard and genuinely in pain, and this is a totally valid request that Davy and Carl don't seem too into, but at the same time, the show doesn't really seem like they're trying to be super generous about covering up how kind of irritated she became over the course of this whole situation. So what did you read into this whole situation with Elizabeth and her back in the shelter?
Yeah, I couldn't tell quite what they were going for either. And so when Davy says this is a full day job, not a half day job, and you can't just start this, you know, and have to continue this past the point where everyone's trying to go to bed in that shelter, is that true or not? I don't know. None of the audience who hasn't played Survivor before or is an outdoor survival expert is really equipped to know. So it's like we have to take it at face value that their message is the right one, but we don't know what that message is. And there seems to be some confusion or disagreement over that, which maybe is a good thing. Maybe they shouldn't be so explicit about who we're meant to root for in that interaction, but it's kind of confusing, and I'm not quite sure what to make of it.
Right, I loved the nuance of it, to be clear. I love not really knowing how we're necessarily supposed to read into this, because if we came in and all we saw was Elizabeth talking about what slackers everyone else is on her tribe, and this was less kind of open-ended as far as how, what her kind of motivation was, if it was legit or if she was just kind of freaking out. I think it's good that we aren't super clear on that, especially when Elizabeth, to this point, I really do think has been built up as a likable and sympathetic enough figure to, and this is a very, very crucial thing that I would love to see more from Survivor editors, to overcome something like this. I think it's vital that, as has been discussed in some other previous podcasts that came up, I think the next kind of evolution in the edit of Survivor is going to be a willingness to kind of show a more flawed version of the eventual winner than they ever really have been, barring exceptional circumstances in the past. And I think a scene along these kinds of lines would be perfect in fitting in with something like that.
So with that in mind, what do you make of Gabby's edit so far? Because we've seen a little bit of a journey where she gets close to Christian, and then Christian is getting close to other people, and she's jealous of that on some level, or envious of that. And now we're seeing her take steps to find a parity for herself and try to replicate what he has with somebody else. So we're seeing this slow evolution in Gabby's storyline in gameplay terms. But that's all under the umbrella, if you like, of her crying all the time, and against this backdrop of vulnerability, which typically is portrayed as something that you do have to recover from, and it is a weakness not only in the game but also as a character trait in life.
Right. There's virtually no chance to me that they are showing this much of Gabby being kind of down on herself in an effort to, over the course of the season, show us how that's actually a great virtuous trait in Survivor winners, and more people should come out there and be like that. The story for Gabby, to me, as far as I'm concerned, come down to whether or not she can very soon start taking a real sharp turn towards that more Goliath-y kind of role, because I'm absolutely open to the idea that, particularly on a season called David versus Goliath, the underdog who gets off to kind of a rough start, or at least a start that we can paint as rough over the course of this pre-merge, who then grows a lot as a person on her way to winning the $1 million over a really dazzling kind of second half of the season, is absolutely a story that they would love to tell. But again, as I feel like I've been saying for far too long at this point, it really needs to start turning soon for me before I start being very worried for Gabby that it's too late.
Yeah, the easiest and laziest comparisons that you can make about the season are Gabby with like the Aubreys and the Hannah Shapiros of the world. It's easy to overlook that they had their moments of weakness. They had that episode where it looked like they were dead on arrival, but they moved on from that, and they just kind of adjusted into a more like normalized Survivor experience. Gabby is still going through this on episode 6. Right, so it's been a very kind of one note thing from Gabby, if you look at it solely on those terms. So I'm curious when this is going to end, and if so, how? Now that we're at the merge, is that facade just abruptly going to drop, and Gabby's going to be presented as this normal player again, or will this be just a constant accompaniment to everything she does in the game, even if what she's doing is assertive and confident and actually perfectly normal for someone in her position?
Yeah, I don't see a timeline where I'm going to be hanging the dun chain on Gabby after the merge, but I would say the merge will be a very important episode as far as how I'm viewing Gabby's chances going forward.
That's fascinating, because I think many people many people hanged or possibly hung the dun chain on Gabby a few weeks ago at this point. And I don't know if it's your undying love for her which is keeping her in contention for you, or if you think there's actually something that all of those people are missing.
Well, she literally invented the medium of comedy, as we've been over, and as I stand by those exact words. So you got to leave her alive for at least a little bit longer because of that.
Sure.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Davey and Carl also here on this Orange Tribe, seeming to be kind of the antagonists in this scene with Elizabeth. But I wouldn't say that either of them came across particularly bad or bossy or demanding or anything like that. I think it was the show at least let them explain their position of, hey, this job would take really long and we only have a couple hours before sundown, and let's do this tomorrow if that's not too big of a deal. What did you think of Davey and I guess and Carl too over the course of this scene?
Yeah, so even on rewatch, I was looking to see who was involved in that argument, and it seemed like it was mostly Davey, more so than Carl. But I don't know if this was just the easiest branch of that argument to show to the audience. And in reality, Carl was just like quietly fuming the entire day in the shelter because, you know, Elizabeth had the gall to try cutting the bamboo or something. I could believe that too.
I mean, I would also believe you if it turned out that Davy and Carl were like surprised that this even made air, that this was like such a non-issue to them right in the moment that it wasn't even something they thought would be included.
Yeah, and it's shown as something that either speaks for itself or which we're meant to give our own interpretation of. So you have Kara saying, like, this is great for me because it's going to draw attention to one of them. No matter which side wins that argument, the heat's going to be off her. But outside of that, we don't get anyone saying, like, well, now I hate Carl and I want to vote Carl out, or we don't have Davy, like, really turning on Elizabeth. So maybe that explains how when we get to the merge, it's not going to be this united David front anymore. So, Mike White's fears of going into the minority of Davids versus Goliaths might prove to be unfounded. If all of the Davids are snapping at each other and the Goliaths are voting each other out, then maybe that's just a lost cause to begin with.
Yeah. And quickly on Kara, she got a little bit in there, as you mentioned, about just a quick confessional talking about essentially just kind of loving life now that this conflict is going on around her. And I didn't have any kind of strong negative reaction to the way that Carl and Davy were portrayed here, but my kind of overwhelming reaction was this seemed like more good news for Kara, which seems to be a recent theme these last couple of weeks on the podcast.
Yeah, and I've really been liking what I've seen of Kara so far, and there's a chance she is playing the best game out there, despite the early missteps and things that she's had to overcome so far.
Carrie Manthe? Is that...
That's only going to land for a small group of people, and even they are not going to enjoy it that much. But
that's true.
I appreciate the effort.
That's like my future Twitter bio, is this is only going to land for a small percentage of you, and no one's even going to like it, but here you go.
Well, hey, that's a good marketing opportunity. If you want to possibly have a chance of finding that joke funny, subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/JohnMcColin for only $5 a month. You can maybe find some joy in the things that Colin says nonsensically all the time, every episode.
What a natural salesman you are, Dom.
Thank you. But yeah, I think she's doing really well for herself, and whenever we do get to see her either just engage with other people, they seem to like her, or whenever she's talking to the audience, she comes across as very just with it and articulate and knowing what's going on. So yeah, I think she remains a dark horse pick, and maybe the quiet edit is a sign that things will not end well. But as you said, this season that's less reliable than it has been maybe any point in recent memory. And I could definitely buy her being there towards the end with a great shot to win.
Yeah, I co-sign all of that. And I guess this is the point at which we would talk about the immunity challenge if there was much to talk about, because the purple team puts up what I'm going to call, not having thought really through many of like the pre-merge tribal challenges for any real reason beyond the week that they aired in real time, I'm going to say that this purple team puts in one of the worst bids we've ever seen in a tribal immunity challenge, at least the time that we've been podcasting. They don't end up even making it to the puzzle portion here, and they are going to be heading back to tribal council. And I know we've already talked.
Would you like to offer up a top five list of worst pre-merge challenge performances, or do none others come to mind for now?
No, you know what? There are just so many that are... that I can't take the time to list through all of them, Dom. I would have to extend it to a top 25, baby, to even begin to do all of my fond memories justice.
Well, that's five times as many opportunities to put your foot in your mouth. So I'm excited to see what you can make out of that.
Five times as many opportunities for like blatant, diabolical, deliberate sabotage that like clearly makes you happier than anything this podcast has ever produced.
Well, aren't you glad that I'm happy for a change? You don't seem to enjoy this transformation.
What I need to do is just come up with some segments where I'm not the idiot character every time. Like, I need to find, I guess Casual Dom Thinks is a good start. I think that one's delivering in that capacity, but we'll definitely work on that, because this balance needs to shift pretty drastically back in my favor. Did you have any thoughts on the immunity challenge of any potentially here?
People understand that Casual Dom Thinks is just you bullying me. They're not on board with that. But for this challenge, I did actually admire the way they carried on, even when clearly they weren't going to win, and when continuing was just going to make them more frustrated. Even though it's not like the practical choice or whatever, I admired that. You know, I like that they stuck it out and at least wanting to finish and complete that experience.
I guess I liked it. I wouldn't have faulted them if they were like, look, obviously the other teams are 2/3 the way done with the puzzle by now. This is not going to happen. A puzzle that just gets progressively easier as you go, and have fewer and fewer pieces and fewer empty spaces to fill in. I wouldn't have blamed them if Mike White had been able to convince them to kind of just stop before his hands fell off. But nonetheless, this purple team going to be going back to Tribal Council. And as we alluded to when talking about Lyrsa specifically earlier, I would suspect that this was not a huge shock to the purple team. And as these hours were passing between the challenge and Tribal Council, I am guessing that this kind of political situation and the suspense about who was going to be leaving was a bit less up in the air than the show would probably want us to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. And I guess let's talk quickly through just the couple of things we saw at the end of this episode, kind of leading up to Tribal Council and Tribal Council itself. One notable thing that I touched on quickly earlier, but I was wondering if you got this same kind of vibe right after the challenge when Mike was talking about how he loved this group before and really wanted all of them to make it to the merge. Did you think at any point that he might say, hey, I'm rich, I don't need this, you guys all deserve to be here, I'll just tap out?
Maybe not with those exact words, I'm rich, I don't need to be here, but with that general sentiment in mind, I did think that we could be heading in that direction.
Yeah, I could buy all of you. I don't need this shit.
If every one of you won $1 million, I would still be richer than the entire rest of the group, you know. Just laying it on thick, but that doesn't seem to be Mike White's style, but I don't think quitting is his style either, actually.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I did think the editors did, like, a good job. I thought, just, like, mentally being honest with myself, the door was absolutely open for me that, first of all, Mike White might quit, which went out the door relatively quickly, but I thought Nick was the only one on this team who, for me, was just lock safe. And I did buy the possibility that Angelina could potentially be the one who ended up leaving, although Lyrsa was certainly the front runner for me.
Well, they hooked me in. I genuinely thought Angelina was going home, and I had the hashtag Lyrsa is fiercer tweet all queued up. I was very proud of myself for that. Wish I'd thought of it a few weeks ago when it still would be relevant, but as it turns out, like, yeah, I was in. I thought Angelina's gone, Lyrsa's going to make it to the merge, and probably much further than that. I thought what you said and Jordan said last week about she's going to be in the spotlight now, but if she gets to the merge, then who is ever voting Lyrsa out for the next, you know, 4 or 5 episodes? I thought that was on point, and I think she fell just short here of having a pretty long run in the game.
Yeah, instead of Lyrsa is fiercer, it is unfortunately, I got a good tweet from me.
Is it Lyrsa is worse? What was your tweet?
I hope I'm crediting the right person. I believe it was Tom Palmer who tweeted at me after the episode ended, Tiersa for Lyrsa.
Oh, that's good. That's good. It's not good that Liz is gone. You understand, but that, okay. If she has to go, that's some consolation.
Right.
The,
exactly.
The wordplay opportunities that come out of it.
Right. Strong stuff there. So this obviously is a huge vote with the merge right around the corner. And I'm guessing most people were doing that kind of math that if it's not at 13, it's going to be very soon after. And obviously we know because of the next time on, it will be at 13. But what did you think about Nick and his just willingness, it seemed, to go along with letting go of a David here? Do you feel like he missed an opportunity to try to put pressure on to get rid of a Goliath?
So if you're looking at it through that paradigm of it's David versus Goliath, then a lot of things you have to look at differently. So the Alec decision looks completely terrible, right? He's just torturing his chances and all the other David's chances or all the other Goliath's chances of doing well. And likewise with this move, it would seem just stupidly risky to flip on your group and go along with this. Everyone is looking towards the future. And even if they want to be with the David if they're a David or the Goliath if they're a Goliath for now, they want to have a parachute so that like a safety valve in case things go wrong. And some of them are already planning on like disrupting that. They want to have this new group, this new mixed alliance, which they think will serve them better. So it feels to me like Mike White, he's playing fairly passively so far, and Nick was coming to him, right? And because he found himself in this position of power. He's in the majority, and Nick needs to save himself. I don't know if the roles were reversed, if it's him approaching Nick to try and work out that same kind of deal. But when Nick comes to him, and they are now the swing votes, essentially, they can vote out Angelina if they want, they can vote out Lisa if they want, that move will have different implications for each of them if you're looking at it on that axis. So this outcome seems maybe a lot better for Mike White, and it's maybe going to allay his fears about the David just swarming over and taking over them now that they've voted out their own Goliath members. But I don't know if it's going to be that simple. And it seemed like Lisa thought she had a good thing going with Nick, whereas Angelina, I imagine, is going to have a lot more options at the merge. And even if she seemed to want to work with Nick now, how much can you really trust in that? I don't know if you can take that to the bank.
I would not count on taking that to the bank, but I think you nailed the kind of underlying wisdom that I'm guessing was going through pretty much everyone's mind here, but most notably Nick and probably to some extent Mike White as well in making this decision, which is not only our tribe, but also another tribe has demonstrated that this whole David versus Goliath thing is almost as much fake news as they put out on the Dom and Colin podcast on a weekly basis, where this hasn't been David versus Goliath ever since Alec ended up flipping, essentially, if not even prior to that. And we know the merge is coming soon. We feel good about each other. And I'm guessing Nick and Mike White are honest with each other about, yeah, if we can get to the merge, I feel good about these four. Nick can tell him about all the former Davids he feels good about, and Mike can talk about all the Goliaths he feels like he has a good chance of bringing in as well. I'm guessing both of them and across the board on all the tribes, most people are probably going to be entering this merge not thinking in terms of, okay, we have seven Goliaths against six Davids. I guess we got to let that be the kind of deciding factor in how we let the political situation start breaking out. I'm guessing people have had much bigger plans than that for a long, long time.
Especially as, even if that's what you want to do yourself, you're looking over at the challenges when the other tribes walk in, and you're seeing outcomes which don't make any sense if everyone else believes that too. So maybe you're Dan and you're off in your own world, and you want to stick Goliath strong, but you look over and you see first person or whatever voted out of whatever the tribe is called, Natalia's gone. And it's like, well, okay, that can only happen if some weird idol shenanigans have taken place, or if one of your former Goliath members have flipped. And so they're clearly not working on the same, they're not working from the same guidelines anymore. So you have to rethink that yourself too, even if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I think there are going to be a lot of people not really sure about what the dynamic is going to be at the merge. And I think that's one of the best things you can ask for entering the merge. And that's probably one of the kind of hidden benefits to splitting people into three different groups versus two different groups that I don't know if I've ever really heard flagged up, but just the kind of uncertainty about what's going on, not just at one other camp, but two other camps, I'm sure adds a big element of mystery entering the merge.
Yeah, I think there is maybe a hidden downside to that too, though. Like, if you have three groups and they are imbalanced in challenges, they always seem to end up. And that's, I don't know if that's an imbalance in the initial tribes, like carrying forward into those three new tribes. But either way,
it doesn't matter what the initial tribes are when you're redrawing for new tribes. There's no.
Well, it does in terms of the loyalties of the people who end up on them. Right?
But like physical strength, it doesn't matter as far as challenge ability.
Jesus, no. What I'm saying is, okay, if you have one tribe which is so much stronger than the other tribe to start with. I don't know what was confusing about that.
I'm an idiot is what's confusing about it.
I would never say that about you, Colin, but you know. So if you have this imbalance, then that is going to carry over in some regard to these new tribes. And when that happens, like we saw last time, that tribe with Laurel and Wendell and so on was never going to tribal, realistically. And I would say, even though they lost that reward this time, the new green tribe is, they're going to have the same honor. Like, that you could have another four episodes of the pre-merge. You could carry it on longer than Heroes vs. Villains did, and they would still not come close to touching tribal, I imagine. And when that happens, you get these, like, post-swap alliances, which are never really tested. And that can be a bad thing, that can be a good thing, but you have this very different dynamic versus the tribes, like the one that Nick is on currently, where they're having to go back time and time again and just be whittled down. And I don't know if what that leads to. I don't know what it looks like, but I don't know if it's interesting or more interesting than the other possibilities.
Well, I think the tribes that have these post-swap alliances that have never been tested, yeah, you feel good about people in theory, but you, unlike the tribes that have been losing in this kind of post-swap scenario, have never really had to, I guess almost like gotten the privilege of going and testing those alliances and making sure that you actually can really feel good about these people. So I would say the kind of counterbalance to being on the tribe that doesn't end up having to go to the post-swap tribal council is the team that goes to them and survives them, I have to imagine, feels much better about their group entering the merge. And I think that's a big piece of why we see so often these really small minorities overcome these massive supermajorities.
So there is a hot take to discuss here from a good friend of the show, Sarah Channon, who made what I thought was an actually pretty astute point on Twitter that on paper, yeah, Angelina seems like the much bigger threat. But as we say occasionally, like, if you have the votes to get somebody out and everybody can see through their bullshit and they're ready to vote them out at the drop of the hat, are they actually a strategic threat anymore? Like, okay, Angelina might have all of these schemes going on in her mind and she might be good at executing them outside of any other context. But when you have her dead to rights here, and you have people on other tribes who you know have had conflict with Angelina before, how much room does she really have to play? Versus with Lyrsa, like, you saying that she is a lock for Final Six or Final Five if she gets to the merge, firstly, that's one slot that other people can't occupy, first of all. Even if Lyrsa was doing nothing at all in the game, if she was just napping in the shelter for the next 15 days, just her taking up that slot by itself reduces everyone else's chances. But then also, she seemed like someone who, however, abrasive people are finding her, can work her way into that group and fit into a new majority or maybe even forge one for herself. Whereas Angelina, even if she's better at that in the abstract, if no one's willing to do it, then how much you really have to worry about?
I remember my mind being blown the first time I was watching Survivor China when someone, I'm going to give credit to Todd for this just because I don't know who else it would have been kind of making this being involved in this decision making and also putting it in these kinds of analytical terms. But I remember someone saying when the decision was between booting Jamie, who everyone was kind of sketched out by, but also viewed as a pretty big threat within the game, or someone else, and maybe it was Eric, maybe it was someone else who was lower key but much better liked, someone made the point that as much of a threat as we may view Jamie and as sketchy as she may be, everyone knows that. And no one left in the game is at any point going to be willing to trust her fully or feel good about her. And I remember hearing that kind of line of thinking and being just like blown away at how, frankly, right it seems like that kind of line of thinking often is in these kind of scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would say I definitely think this could have been one such situation. Like, as we were talking about before we saw the result in previous podcasts, Lyrsa was, to me, the epitome of the kind of player where once you let Lyrsa hit the merge, lock it in that she will be there at Final Six. Forget about people being willing to take her out.
Are you liking Angelina so far, either ironically or unironically?
I am unironically liking Angelina, right? I am, yes, I am in earnest liking Angelina for sure in a big way. And I understand that this was not the best episode for her probably. And I don't know if she is still someone that I have a ton of faith in to pull off a win here out of this cast full of people that I still think are, many of whom are still drawing live. Angelina may not be getting the kind of treatment that I would be looking for in that capacity, but on a personal level, I absolutely am loving Angelina. She seems like a ton of fun. She seems like she's obviously very much there to play, and I am individually rooting for Angelina to be there for as long as I possibly can. Like, while I don't necessarily see her as certainly not one of the front runners at this point to be winning, I am totally open to the timeline where she is in there all the way through to the end, potentially all the way through at Final Tribal Council, and I think that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think some wrestling referee has already ostentatiously hung the dun chain around Angelina's neck.
Hang.
But despite that, she's been a joy to watch so far, and I think regardless of the way this goes with her, whether she is just like very competently like masterminding the game, or if she's trying to mastermind the game and it ends up flopping in hilarious fashion, I'm on board either way, you know. And she's always the type to give a good explanation of the situation that she's in, even if the assumptions she's working from turn out to be completely flawed and incorrect and putting her in danger. So yeah, I'm really loving watching her. And the Natalie thing last week, that was just fantastic. I don't think we're going to live up to that for the rest of the season, but we're going to get stuff in that same kind of oeuvre, right? Which I think is always going to be fun to watch.
So the date and time is currently November 1st, 2018. It is 8:48 p.m. here on the East Coast. I, Colin Stone, am putting a take on the official record. Angelina will be back on Survivor, and Angelina will be an early boot on her second season of Survivor.
You think she's getting Shireen'd, possibly?
Yeah, I think that could be a potentially apt comparison there. I think she is going to be a really fun character for as long as she's on. I am positive she's going to be in the mix to be returning, assuming she lasts another couple of episodes, which may be a bold assumption, but I'm guessing she's going to come away as one of the more memorable characters from this season. It seems like she has an upper hand with the demographics that she checks off as far as the things that they tend to historically struggle with filling returnee slots for. So I would definitely be looking at Angelina early here as a returnee front runner. There are plenty of other people that I think have a lot of returnee equity as well, but I would definitely be putting her near the top of that list for sure. And I unfortunately do not know how well that's necessarily going to go for her once she is more of a known commodity.
And that casting struggle is entirely self-imposed, by the way. Like, if you, with the demographic split that they have on most seasons, like, you are limiting your own pool of returnees, and that's, you know, that's a natural consequence of your own decisions. And hey, it doesn't help when the boot order is almost verging on millennials versus Gen X-esque in terms of representation, where like you have looking down the boot order, you have Jeremy at then, I guess, B booted herself, so take that out of the mix, but then Natalia, Natalie, and now Lisa, and it's not looking good in those terms. So Angelina's going to have to really hold up that side of things for the team, but that is their own problem, and it's one that they can't really complain about. It's not like they can just throw up their hands and act like there's nothing they can do.
Right. No, I definitely agree with that. But so, all right, what else on this episode? I know, do you have any tribal council notes, anything jump out at you? It really seemed to me like the whole kind of buildup and actual tribal council itself were really just an effort to open the door to the audience for as many different kind of timelines as was possible, when, as I've said a couple of times, I'm really not sure how much suspense there actually was out on the island here, so I'm not sure how much to read into anything we really saw.
The one thing that maybe we could talk about is Angelina buttering up Nick, because he seemed to enjoy the compliment in the moment, but is he already in that frame of mind where anything she says can't be taken at face value, and clearly it's just it must have some ulterior motive behind it, and it's almost comical how hard she's trying? Or is Nick actually believing it, and it's, Angelina, that's very kind, that's very nice of you?
The former, I would suspect.
Yeah, so that's my read too, and Nick is obviously smarter than to give that away. But I imagine I don't think that's helping Angelina's case in his mind.
Well, in fairness, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that is also Angelina's read on Nick, and has been for both of them since the first time they met. And I don't necessarily even think that's a bad thing. Like, honestly, if you ask Dom and Wendell last season, I think both of them recognized immediately what a threat the other person was. And we saw once they got down to Final Four, they just openly acknowledged, all right, we got to kill each other now, or at least do our best to try. And I think that even knowing someone is out for themselves isn't a deal breaker, particularly for people who seem to be thinking players, the way that I would give Angelina and Nick certainly both credit for being within the game. It is just a matter of degree there, and I do think Angelina may be pushing it, more to your point.
Yeah, I it wouldn't surprise me if they end up having this like very open corporate understanding about the need to go after each other down the line. But when she is doing her best to exclaim like the exact opposite of that, you have to, you know, put the bullshit filter up a little bit.
Right. I think one thing and this is, I don't know how soon we're going to be really even realistically seeing this kind of thing go on, in, except in cases like Dom and Wendell, where they really are super kind of like game savvy guys who understand the rationale behind why this would be, you know, the kind of meat shield strategy is a great idea. I think in the future, seeing just kind of open deals like that, like people talking about, I'll take you all the way to Final Four and that'll be it, is something that would be an indicator to me that the players are really evolving, and it's not people just swearing each other finals deals in situations that are wildly unrealistic. Like, I don't even know, in, not that Survivor's going to run for necessarily even this long, but like in 20 seasons, if something like a JT and Steven deal could even kind of exist, if players keep evolving like this, where they would both be forced to recognize we can't both, this can't be good for both of us.
Right. I don't have much about this episode or about the edit zone, but I'm curious that you seem to think Angelina is still drawing live in editing terms, because it's almost comical how she's falling off the board for me.
Yeah, I don't think she's drawing very live. I think it is certainly possible that things turn around for her come merge time, and this was just a temporary kind of stain on an otherwise what I thought was visible and decent enough edit through the first few episodes. It really, I don't want to get too caught up in recency bias, I guess, in terms of ruling her out, but you are absolutely right that there is a lot to be concerned about as things pertain to Angelina, I would say.
Yeah, and I think it's like the Natalie thing, that is such gold that you would put it in there regardless. If I'm the editor, I'm not cutting that out of some adherence to like this platonic ideal of what a winner's edit should look like. I was like, well, this is funny, so I'm putting it in, and you know, that's, I get to do that because that's my job, right? But I think it's more damaging for Angelina than it would be for basically anyone else out there, because her, I think her self-image, first of all, but also her image as a player is very heavily based on like this, I am this like, smart, competent, assertive person. And so anything that looks like I'm not in on the joke or I'm the butt of the joke, it seems so much worse than someone who can kind of roll with the punches in that sense.
I agree, yeah.
Like if Anthony is going to win, it's going to be a flawlessly executed plan, which, you know, there's this five-point plan, which she kept devising in her head and everyone else was brought in on, versus this, which, like, what I'm very carelessly trying to get at here is I don't think Angelina can really have any kind of underdog story. I think it's either she is running the game from the top down, or she is just twisting in the wind and eventually is cut loose. I don't think there's really any happy medium in between.
I agree with that, and I think that's something that could be an issue for a lot of the original Goliath people in particular.
Yeah, like John, for instance. Like maybe he ends up going on some immunity run, but it's going to be hard to square that with, look at this plucky underdog trying to fight his way against these awful Davids. Like there's no way that you can have that make sense and not seem laughable.
Right, I totally agree with you. I do want to get to a couple of just kind of merge calls and a couple other notes that I had that I think it would be pertinent to just officially send it to the edit zone with for those purposes. But before we do that, he is of course on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. And as he mentioned so eloquently before, if you would be interested in supporting the show and getting weekly bonus episodes where we are going through talking classic CBS reality seasons right now, just about done almost with Heroes versus Villains, you can find all of that over at patreon.com/DomandColin. Dom, anything else that you want to get to before we just start wrapping up and hitting on the no holds barred kind of edit takes?
Nothing else other than we are at the 120 mark currently. I am setting a hard exit for 130, so
okay.
I'm just leaving the call at that point if we're not done by then. So okay. let's do our best to keep it in the limits.
All right, here's the edit zone.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway,
Michelle Ken,
Brad Culpepper,
David Goliath.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin
Edit Zone.
What are you doing?
Tune out now.
Okay, here we are in the edit zone now. And Dom, I just wanted to officially send it to the edit zone to talk about just how I see this merge vote breaking down, because, or, and get your take on it as well, because I really have no idea which particular groups of people are going to be coming together. And the way that I am viewing this is truly just in terms of who, based on the edit, seems like the merge vote almost has to go their way. And to me, the clear number one is Christian. I feel like Christian is going to be at the center of whatever majority ends up forming here. And I would imagine Gabby is almost surely going to be along with that. And I would guess John by extension as well.
Okay. So is that dangerous time then for Angelina, who we see in the preview trying to get this group together against Christian and maybe prompting what he describes as this counterinsurgency?
Yeah. Angelina, I think Nick could be the big power player with regard to Angelina's fate. Like, I would suspect we will see Nick and Christian meet back up, that alliance that shall not be named, reforming, and I would guess that Nick will get in on whatever Christian has going on at this merge vote, and I would imagine that if he were so inclined, Angelina would be able to get it on board with that as well. Like, if they are just trying to rally numbers, and we've heard Nick in particular twice over a couple of episodes talking about how mandatory it is for Davids to work with Goliaths, it really seems to me like he wouldn't necessarily be opposed to bringing Angelina in, but I'm not sure if that's a lock the same way that I really feel like it may be for a couple other people, much more so in particular. Elizabeth, I think, seems like one of the likelier candidates, and I would guess Davy and Carl, if they're pulling in other Davids as well. That's kind of the group that I would be looking at taking this merge by control.
I could also see Alec being like the quintessential merge vote, not only because he has this, the rippling abs, and he's crushing the challenges on behalf of his group. And you've got to be concerned that if you give him chances in the individual challenges, then you're not going to get many more of them. It might be like a Joe Angleman thing where, okay, he's not going to win 9 in a row and make it all the way to the end. But the fact that on any given day, he's the favorite to win it means you can't plan around him being vulnerable. And that's going to cause some complications down the line.
Right.
On top of that, I think anyone who has met Alec in the game so far has been betrayed by him or sketched out by him to some degree. So I don't know who he can really count on to argue his case when the big group huddle without him is going on.
Is he your merge boot pick?
If I had to pick someone, I think he would be. Yeah, even disregarding his chances of winning that challenge and delaying the inevitable for 3 more days.
Yeah, I guess I would be looking at him. I guess I would also be looking at Dan, especially if he's getting fed nothing but misinformation about what's going on from the bro chachos there. And also, I am certainly remiss not to be mentioning Mike White, I would imagine, is going to be involved in whatever this majority alliance is. It seems like I would be much more optimistic about Nick bringing Mike White in than Angelina.
Mike White, so I'm enjoying his sense of like bemused distance from what the entire proceeding so far, where it's like he gets roped into things but doesn't seem to especially care or like anyone, and he's just there for the ride, and I imagine he'll be there for most of the rest of the ride at this rate, but it's unclear exactly what his thought process is, because he just doesn't really talk about things.
I mean, yeah, in a sense he doesn't really talk about things, but I do think he's adding a lot of kind of like Jim Halpert value to this season. It's just kind of like the everyday, the everyman, observing all this wildness going on around him, just kind of mugging to the camera, like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. Well, what do you make of John's chances in the game so far? He hasn't had to vote anyone out in a while, and we see him just, performing his shtick and practicing his type five. But beyond that, what do you make of his role in the game? Because the game's going to go through this upheaval at the merge, and so far he's been safe, but he hasn't been tested, and for as much as I see people correctly saying he's doing a great job with Christian and everyone seems to like him and respect him and he's doing great on behalf of his team, he has to be an obvious threat when we get to the merge. We haven't seen him have to go through that adversity so far.
Right. I mean, John, I will give him enough credit that he will know, okay, now that we have hit the merge, that is the tipping point for me in this game. From this point forward, I will always be viewed as a threat and there is absolutely nothing I can do about it. But based on what we've seen so far and just kind of extrapolating that onto how I would imagine John has been spending his hours that we're not seeing on the island, I don't see why I would be concerned about John right now. Other than the obvious reasons that we've gone through, like why he's always going to be a threat, it really seems to me like for someone in that position, I cannot imagine doing executing better than it seems like John has to this point. I have been blown away by the performance that I've seen, what little I've seen of John, admittedly. But I'm certainly anticipating seeing more of that, frankly. I feel like John is long for this game, despite being obviously one of the bigger physical targets.
So I always have this question about when we are giving this glowing praise to a figure like John, where the actual evidence on the ground is pretty thin, and yet we're just praising them to the rooftops, because it feels like we don't want to admit that our thought process may be wrong. So we kind of want to tie it to their performance in the game, where it's like, if they're missing us through the screen, then clearly they must be having the same effect on the people out there, and everyone else must be feeling the same way. I don't know how true that is, but I don't have any reason to disbelieve it so far. So I'm kind of at a loss to know what to think.
For me, it's more just what we're not seeing of John, and what we're not seeing is him rubbing people the wrong way. And people in John's archetype tend to get that treatment when they rub people the wrong way.
Okay. Who else stands out to you? Because it's looking down this list of 13 people left in the game, other than Carl and I guess Allison, who would be on the list if she had been developed any further, I'm interested what everybody in the game has left in terms of their potential and their positioning going in. And that's a great spot to be in.
Why do you hate Carl? I'm interested in Carl.
I love Carl. He's my low-key fave, but I just don't know where his head is at or what he's thinking in terms of, like, is he just going to be David Strong? Is he going to take anyone who has him? Or what else he's really looking at?
Okay, so I think Carl, stay with me here, Dom. This is an obscure reference. Go back to that Twitter bio quote. This is not going to land for many people. But there's a very famous episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where the gang solves the gas crisis and Charlie is the wild card. That's his role in the gang. And actually, conveniently, he spends the entire episode in a cowboy hat, dressed up as like a Southern oil salesman, much like Carl here, Carly Day, or I guess he's Carly Kelly on the TV show, Charlie Kelly. I feel like Carl's role is being that wild card, and probably a little less wild than Charlie Kelly on It's Always Sunny, but I'm certainly not ruling Carl out from being a very interesting player in this game going forward.
Yeah, I'm already workshopping some Carly B puns for down the line. But yeah, Carl could end up, like, despite himself, being a swing vote almost, where it's like, okay, well, we're almost at the threshold. We just need one more. And, oh, look, here's Carl, who we forgot about. But, you know, someone has to go and make a case of him now.
Yeah, wild Carl, bitches. Yeehaw. Dom will not get that, but that was a very strong closing reference.
It's sad that Always Sunny references might be obscure here in 2018, but I guess that's the world we live in now.
No, it's horrifying. I mean, Always Sunny, I am a massive, massive fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I still watch all the seasons, and they're on season 12 now, and there was a new episode yesterday night. It airs the same last night, I guess, as normal people would frame it. It airs the same night as Survivor, and even 12 seasons in, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is still slaying on all fronts. It is fantastic to this day, and definitely do check that show out. All right, Dom, I also wanted to get to Davey a little bit, who had been certainly on my radar. I haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks at this point about Davey. What do you think about him?
So this is your 1 minute warning, first of all.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
I love Davey, love what I've seen so far, but I'm not sure how he's going to work his way or slither his way into a group at the merge. He might be the guy who everyone kind of likes, but is also a little bit suspicious of, and I could see him not being the merge boot necessarily, but finding himself on the outs and him using his idol effectively might be one of the big stories of that early phase.
I agree with that. And my final note of this episode, I thought it was interesting that Dan mentioned offhand, and it remained in the episode, how much he misses Kara when he's off on this island away from her. And I am still buying Kara absolutely as a possible winner candidate here.
I think definitely a good chance we see her involved in any Dan blindside down the line, whoever ends up engineering that.
All right, I have 20 seconds to wrap the show up, Dom. Are you good?
I'm good. So you can follow me on Twitter at DomHRV. And I think that's going to do it. So love you all. Good to be back. Join us next week, which I imagine we'll go over the 130 mark, but we'll see if we can rein that in. And I'm liking this new snappy edit zone. It's really galvanizing. We have 4 seconds left. Love you all. Bye. See you next time.